listening the other day to a YouTube thing. They were saying there's a set number of Augusta National members, and basically if you get close, they either push you out or they like try to kill you. And I was like, I don't think that's how it works.
Yeah, I got a feeling that's not the case. I don't know how attractive being a member would be if they're going to try to assassinate you.
Exactly. Yeah. I think the enrollment would go down dramatically. It was like clickbait. And I was like, this is what you led into the show with. This is ridiculous.
I could take out of my life everything except my experiences at St. Andrew, and I still have a rich, full life.
But the last tee shot I hit was more like it, that one in the playoff.
Against Vaughn and Ray.
That's right.
And the best thing to win the Masters, you will be here forever as long as you are still alive, so that's the best thing. I'm very happy.
Welcome to episode 115 of the Talking Golf History Podcast. In part one of the myths of the Masters, we are joined once again by golf historian and Masters specialist Greg Lamb, who joined us last year for the podcast called Before Augusta National. Folks, you're in for a delightful, lighthearted, but educational podcast on the myths of not only the Masters, but Augusta National. This will be a two-part podcast, which will lead us into the 2024 Masters Tournament. Before we dive into today's show, make sure to sign up for our free golf history newsletter, which is released every Tuesday at 8 a.m. Eastern. Every week, we release a new newsletter with multiple historical stories relevant to golfers today. You can sign up at www.thesocietyofgolfhistorians.beehiv.com/subscribe. I hope you think about signing up. It's a delightful weekly update of amazing golf history stories. With that being said, let's move on to our show. Part one of the myths of the Masters with golf historian Greg Lamb. Greg Lamb, thank you for coming back to Talking Golf History.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate having the honor to talk with you and also the listeners out there.
Yeah, I think we have a fun podcast here. When you proposed it, I don't know, a couple weeks ago, I just thought it was immediately a brilliant idea. The myths behind not only just the Masters, but Augusta National. And I didn't realize how many myths there were until I really, you know, went down the rabbit hole. How about you?
Oh, I know. It's the same, Connor. Every year, you know, we get into the aura of, you know, Augusta National is this huge institution that only lets people in certain times, kind of hearkening back to Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. They're opening the gates for all the patrons every year. And I think with all the secrecy and some of the things that happen around the club and what goes on, I think a lot of myths tend to pop up and, you know, people tend to believe they're true over time. And we just want to kind of jump in this podcast and kind of set some things straight from things that we've heard, things that you've heard that we just know either aren't true. And we've got some facts in there too that maybe some of the listeners will be like, oh yeah, that does make sense. I kind of know that now. So.
Well, there might be some things we don't know the answer to, right? I mean, I think that's completely, true, you know, with a private club, you know, we're not going to have all the answers. We're just going to give you the best input that we can give you.
Exactly. And that's kind of what we want to do. This was really kind of more lighthearted entertainment. This isn't a hard press fact of, you know, this is the way it is. As always with Augusta National, everything changes. They're always on the basically the tip of perfection and trying to make things better, not only for their membership, but for the patrons. So, you know, some of the things that we kind of mention here may not stand the test of time. You know, they may change things over time and redo things, but it is just kind of a fun thing to do around this time of year to kind of go in and look at the history and look at some of those things that kind of come up around this time of year that we know as historians isn't really true, but we kind of hope that the listeners will kind of enjoy the podcast too. So
yeah, so we're going to remove the smoking jackets we're wearing and the pipes and the monocles and just have a lighthearted podcast for you all. Exactly. I'll tell you one thing. I mean, this isn't really, you know, part of this show, but it might have been very interesting to see how Augusta National might have changed had they gone with the original plans, which I'm mentioning up, I think, in the next newsletter that's coming out. But or maybe it was the last one. I can't remember. I can't sort them out because I write them ahead of time. But it was, you know, replacing the current clubhouse with that grandiose Southern style plantation. Part of the plan was actually to have the Hall of Fame housed within Augusta National. So imagine, Greg, imagine, you know, if you want to call it the secrecy and the aura, how much of that is lost if you have daily visitors to your clubhouse to look at the Hall of Fame?
Exactly.
Connor. Can't even imagine it, can you?
No, I mean, could you imagine just walking up to the gate and paying your ticket like you do with the current Hall of Fame, and you just go on a tour and then you just drive off Augusta National? That
would have changed history.
It's unreal.
Yeah, it's crazy. Crazy. All right, well, let's jump into them. We've got a bunch. It might be two podcasts. I don't know how long it's going to take us, but there's a lot of fun ones. And this one you hear every year, Greg, every single year, and that is that Augusta National ices the azaleas, so they'll be perfect for tournament time. What are your thoughts? Myth, true fact? What do you think?
Actually, it's a myth. I actually heard this on a tour through Savannah, Georgia one time, and it kind of curled my inner, like, no, this isn't right. But checking with some of the people that actually work there during the tournament, Augusta has no power over Mother Nature. This was also true in 2015 Masters, when Billy Payne said that due to an early spring, the color of the tournament would be Masters green. So as we know, you can't really ice down those azaleas to get them ready for the time. Not only that, the water from the ice actually would overwater those azaleas and eventually end up killing them also. So we hear that a lot. I think that's one of the fun ones that we hear. But unfortunately, that is not true. Unfortunately, even Augusta National has to kind of bend to Mother Nature. So,
well, here's another one for you. So there's some talk that a woman was one of the original guests of the Champions Dinner. Do you want to dive into that? Fact or fiction?
That is actually a fact. And I know some of our listeners are going to be like, it's always been a men's club. It's always had that kind of gentleman's air to it. But actually, during a recent trip to Palmetto Golf Club, they actually have a signed, basically napkin in their display. And it actually has the signature of Babe Zaharias, the famous female golfer. She was actually one. We're not sure which one. It could have been the second or the third one. But the Champions Dinner actually did host, or didn't host, but had her as a guest, Babe Zaharias, which is one of the things that kind of blow a lot of people's minds, since they think that it was just a gentleman's club. No women were allowed. Nobody, you know, especially during the early 50s and 60s, that women just weren't allowed on the grounds. And that's completely false. So,
and do we know anything about the how or the why that she was at that dinner?
My guess is just the respect for Babe. To be honest, I mean, she was one of the greatest female golfers. I know Ben Hogan had a lot of respect for her. I think it was actually one of Hogan's guests to actually bring her into that Champions Dinner. I think it's one of the neat little things that we kind of learn through history when you go to other clubs and you see their history and you kind of ask what they have. And that was one thing that after visiting Palmetto, I actually saw and was kind of amazed by. And the old, I guess it's the old professional emeritus there, Tom, was a great kind of steward and historian to kind of walk me through the area and kind of show me all that history there at Palmetto.
I mean, that's an amazing piece of history. I'll be honest with you. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That was really, when we talked about that, that was the one that really took me aside.
Exactly. So that is one of those things that, you know, we always think, well, it's male only. And it was, I think, at the initial aspect, because I think Clifford Roberts did send out the original letter that said it was supposed to be a kind of a stag dinner. But I think, you know, as it progressed and they knew that this was very special, that, you know, certain guests were allowed to come and actually be part of that champions dinner.
You know, regarding dinners and, you know, I'd call it that veil of secrecy. One of them is that, you know, there's never been a recording of a dinner at Augusta National. Is there any truth or is that a fiction?
That's actually a myth. And Connor, you're hitting something close to my heart on this one. As some of the listeners will know, this is something that was kind of near and dear to me overall. President Eisenhower actually had his 50th wedding anniversary and double birthday recorded at Augusta National on October 27th, 1965. So with that recording, they actually recorded the dinner, and it was really interesting to hear that recording. I know that there are a few copies of that. One is actually in the Augusta National Archives.
It was on a record, am I wrong?
It is. It was actually a three-piece record set, which included the likes of Clifford Roberts, Mamie Eisenhower, who was actually there also, and Dwight D. Eisenhower. Those recordings now have actually been digitized, and through the donation that was made through me and my wife, it's actually now at the Presidential Archives there in Wichita, Kansas, for the Eisenhower Library. So,
wow, that is really cool. Nice. Yes. Being part of history, isn't it, Greg?
Oh, it really is. And, you know, Connor, it's the one thing that we want to make sure that a lot of this history is preserved for future generations and future people that enjoy the game and Augusta National. So it really was right to kind of donate that to the archives. So
unbelievable. Very cool. Very cool. Yeah. Well, we'll go back to, you know, we kind of alluded to this, that the original plan was to tear down the clubhouse of Augusta National. One of the stories out there is the clubhouse is the oldest concrete structure in the South. Truth or myth?
That is actually fact. The structure is completely concrete, still stands to this day, as we kind of mentioned in an earlier podcast that we did, the beginning or before Augusta National. It was talked about that, you know, the walls are, I think, close to 3 feet thick. And again, Augusta National just didn't have the money. They went towards that kind of Southern antebellum kind of home design, but the early years of Augusta National just didn't have the money, which is kind of hard to fathom now with as much as they do and everything and the membership that they have. But it is well known that it is actually one of the first concrete structures in the South, using a lot of the stone and water from around the local area in order to form that concrete structure and the iconic clubhouse as we know it today.
So cool. And it's funny because we do talk about this. I actually had a Twitter post the other day where I said, you know, a lot of gets made about, you know, the plans to change it to that antebellum style clubhouse. And I kind of joked because we're very critical of it today, knowing, you know, the classic, you know, kind of Pyrrhic perfect clubhouse that stands there today. But that original plan, I mean, when they acquired the grounds and the clubhouse or the building at the time was not in the best shape. I mean, if you saw the original photos of what was the, you know, the manor house of the Berkmans, yes, and you compared it to what they were planning to build, I think you might have said, boy, this is a really good idea. But after many renovations and restorations, and clearly it's so iconic that it's the Master's Trophy, you know, it's an unforgettable building today. And thank goodness they saved it, right? I mean, thank goodness they came upon hard financial times that, you know, put the club in a position where they couldn't build a new one.
Well, and it's funny to think about that now, but I mean, I think the Masters tournament at this time, it had to go through those pains in order to become what it is today.
Oh, I agree.
I have a lot of respect for the members and the club and everything that they have done in order to make sure that, you know, it really does stand the test of time. So I think you do have to go through hard times in order to get to the good times on many things. And I think Augusta National is a great kind of analogy for that, too. So they fell on hard financial times, getting through the Depression, through a lot of other things. You know, even small membership, it was hard for them to get membership in the first few years, which is now, it's hard to think of today, but during that time, people just didn't have the money during that Depression era in order to join the club.
Yeah, the newsletter that goes out this week, of course, people will be hearing this in a different week, so it won't make any sense, but the newsletter is actually talking about the foreclosure sale of Augusta National and how they had originally planned for, I think, 1,800 members, and by 1935, they only had 66. Now, in the heart of the Great Depression, right? I mean, not to be undersold, but just an amazing story of perseverance. And I talk about the five saviors of Augusta who bought it out of foreclosure sale. And basically from that point on, they didn't struggle. I mean, there wasn't a worry that the club was going to shut down. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I think that gets lost in the story sometimes, but this amazing concrete clubhouse that stands strong today is really much like the Masters. It was a thing of its time. I mean, we might not have the Masters itself if the club didn't have its initial struggles, you know?
Exactly.
So we're blessed even in bad times, I think, is a optimist view of that. Let's go to the next one. The Masters champion gets a new green jacket for each of their wins, meaning that Jack Nicklaus has six green jackets. What say you?
Okay. Unfortunately, that is a myth. I see it every year, and you know, I appreciate the people of Golf Digest and all the other publications that are out there, but you always see these pictures of six green jackets hanging in the background or five green jackets hanging up for Tiger Woods. Unfortunately, that is a myth. The winner only gets one jacket. However, they do get the chance to have multiple trophies or remakes if the trophy changes. A great example of this is that the original trophies that were given out were more of a kind of a silhouette on wood, kind of a plaque that was given out. And as the trophy changed and it became more of a smaller version of that iconic clubhouse in silver, the past champions were actually able to change and get an upgrade to that trophy.
Oh, that's nice.
If they wish. So, and some of those have kind of popped out on the auction sites. You know, I think that some of the players, you know, I think, you know, as time goes on, they've given their items to museums or family members, and sometimes they just have extras. And sometimes it does, you know, hit the open market, as I call it. So,
yeah, I actually, oddly enough, the newsletters that gets released on Tuesday, which of course has already happened because this comes out later, actually talks about Sam Snead's trophy that came out in 2018 and sold for $333,000. An amazing sum for a trophy.
Yes, exactly. It's, as we all know, the Masters is iconic and very limited, and it just kind of has that, as I call it, the it factor. And people just want a piece of Augusta National and the Masters, which, you know, if you have deep pockets, more power to you, as I say.
Yeah, right. Well, I, you know, there's two pieces of trivia that I like to put out there, and I know you'll know one of them, but every, you know, the Masters winner gets to keep the jacket in their possession outside of the clubhouse for 1 year from Masters to Masters. So the shortest period of time for a player holding the Masters jacket in their possession is held by?
That would be Dustin Johnson.
Dustin Johnson. I mean, he got robbed, really, right? He had it for a couple months and he had to return it. And then the other favorite story is who's won the most Masters jackets, right? So ideally it'd be one, but there's a story, and I need to get this from Gary Player himself, but I read this story years ago that when Gary Player won his green jacket, he took it to South Africa and didn't bring it back. And the question was, I think from Cliff Roberts got upset about it, And apparently, I have a hard time believing this, so I'll have to ask Gary one of these days, is Gary said if he wants it so bad, he can fly to South Africa and go get it himself. I can't believe anybody would say that to Cliff Roberts. But the story goes that he might be the only person who had two jackets because he never returned the other one.
That is true. And I think, and on it, this is one thing that I have seen. I know the club has been very generous in donating some jackets to the local community. The local museum there in Augusta actually has a true, authentic Masters jacket there at the museum. And I'm not sure. I've never been to the World Golf Hall of Fame, but I'm not sure if there's one there or not. But I know they have been very good in donating certain jackets to certain causes for the area. So.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, I think that's fantastic.
Exactly.
Hey, our next one, I'll be honest with you. You know, I've been on the property a long time, many times, and I didn't ever realize this was the case. So and the next one is that there's no clocks located on the golf course at Augusta National.
That is actually true.
It's crazy. How is that possible? How did I not know that?
As much as we get inundated with time, where we're at, the old standard stands at Augusta National. Time kind of stands still there. And I think it is one of those items that people will say, oh, I know I've seen clocks there. I know I've seen that. Yes, you have. You've actually seen them over the gates going into Augusta National. So, but that is technically not on the course. That's on the outside. You'll see those. Those are the Rolex clocks above the entry gates as patrons will enter in and go out every year. Now, there is one caveat to this. I did say clocks, but there is actually a sundial of Bobby Jones that is outside the pro shop of Augusta National, and it kind of stands in front of that golf shop. Patrons are welcome during the practice rounds to walk up and take some pictures. You can't get real close because it is roped off, but it is the only way to truly kind of tell time there at Augusta National, actually on the grounds.
And it is a beautiful bronze of Bobby Jones. I think it's actually one of the coolest little sundials I've probably ever seen.
It really is, and I'm always amazed with the attention to detail that they did on that sculpture because, I mean, you can see the almost the pleats of the shirt, you know, the pants, you know, the face is as close as you can get with true bronze. So it is an amazing piece of art.
So if you're going to the Masters this year or in future years, if you're listening to this podcast years from now, it is down the right side of the first fairway. I believe the pro shop is the last connected part of Augusta National before you get to the Cliff Roberts cabin. Does that sound correct? Is it right next to the, I'm trying to picture it now in my head. It's right next to the walkway that goes into the village area. Is that correct?
That is correct. You'll see an information stand. Like if you walk out onto the course and you turn left, you'll see an information stand to your left. Just kind of stay to the left and keep walking up. You'll see the roped area. You will actually see the security guards around that area, but you will come up on that sundial there at your left. It's before you actually get to the crest of the hill there where the clubhouse actually is.
And here's a really good one. The next one we're going to is invitees to the tournament are able to shop in the members pro shop. This is the same building that is fronted by the Bobby Jones sundial, and that those players can purchase any item they want from the pro shop, the members pro shop.
Yeah, unfortunately, that is actually a myth. There are members only items that are only for sale if you are a member of the club. There are certain things inside that pro shop that you have to be a designated member in order to actually purchase. Some of those are cigar stands, some of those are glasses, but yeah, not every invitee. Now they will load up on all the Augusta National sweatshirts, polos, money clips, things of that nature. But unfortunately, there are some items in that pro shop that are only member only items. So you have to be a member of the club.
And I'll give you one of those items that I don't like to use the word covet, but when a tree falls or is taken down at Augusta National, they make these beautiful wooden vases, and the vases actually have the hole that the tree sat on. And you cannot purchase those. Only members can purchase them. And they are gorgeous works of art. And I thought, man, that would look really good in the Golfus. And alas, it will not. But it's really cool. Really cool.
Yeah. And we'll get into another one down the list. But definitely, you kind of hit the nail on the head. There are special items that are only available for members in that pro shop. So even though if you have a friend that's a professional that gets an invitee, or you know, an amateur, unfortunately they can't purchase everything in that pro shop for you.
But so do we know if the, you know, like John Rahm or Tiger Woods during the tournament, can they go into the members pro shop?
They can.
Wow, I did not know that.
Yeah, they actually can, and they can purchase items in that pro shop, but unfortunately it is limited to what they can actually purchase.
Yes, just like myself when I go as a guest, where they're held to the same standard.
That is correct, Connor.
Wow. Here's one. I mean, I wouldn't call what you just said secret, but I did not know that there's a secret menu. There's a secret menu item at the Masters in their concessions. This is obviously something that's true because I'm overwhelmed by it and I just, you know, screwed up this bit. But like, tell me about that. I had no idea.
No, that's all right. And a lot of the people out there, I know that's a big thing now for a lot of our foodie listeners. I guess that's the term that's used now for people that enjoy the food and the concessions and the things at Augusta National. It is one of those items that there are secret menu items. They're not on the board that's outside. However, I will say it's not any of the food. You can kind of mix and match the food items. I know a few people that actually take the pimento cheese and mix it with the barbecue sandwich, the Masters Club with some of the egg salad. There are different things, but unfortunately, most are drink options. One is known as Stand 12, and it is down there at that concession area behind the iconic 12th hole. It's a mix of sports drink. That's what it's going to be labeled. Lemonade and Sprite. Well, it won't say Sprite, but you can say lemon lime soda. You can also order an Arnold Palmer at the stands. It's a mix of tea and lemonade. You would have to tell the individuals pouring it that you need some tea, some lemonade, but they will charge you the same price for that. But yes, there are quote unquote secret menu items at the Masters. So,
that is really cool. Again, another one that I was stumped on.
Yes.
You're the insider here. I like this stuff.
No.
If there's a secret place for me to get a hamburger, I'm all in, by the way.
Well, as I've said, for those listeners that have access to Berkman's
place. Oh, I know. I can smell it every time I walk by Berkman's. It's the forbidden smell for me. Hamburger. Yes.
Well, and I will say Berkman's is an amazing facility with 5 restaurants inside of it, and you can get almost anything, and it all comes with the ticket/badge that you get for that place. So it is an amazing facility, but in the interest of time, we'll kind of get back on course, Connor.
Absolutely. How about this? All of the magnolia trees down Magnolia Lane are original trees since from when it was the Fruitland Nursery.
Unfortunately, that is a myth. We hear this a lot from locals when we were down there for the tournament, and I hear it all the time. It's like those magnolia trees have been there ever since, you know, Prosper Berkman's had the property. Unfortunately, this came one of those things, and you kind of alluded to it first with one of the member items. One of the trees became diseased and was taken out in 2012. The tree was cut down, replaced, and it was actually turned into wooden bowls for the members' jamboree items. And for the listeners that don't know what the Jamboree is. The Jamboree is like the members only kind of tournament that they have there at the club. So only members can play during that week. There's no guest, but it's kind of a all get together for the members of Augusta National to help will kind of play the course. So
that's so cool. I mean, let's stick down this same path. Speaking of nurseries, like Augusta National still has a nursery on site to provide flowers, plants for the needs of the golf club. True or false?
That is actually true. They actually still have a nursery on site. It's kind of tucked in kind of a corner of the lower golf course. If you actually look at a map, it's on the lower part that actually backs up to Augusta Country Club there. But they actually do keep the pansies and the flower hanging baskets that you will see in front of the club, and the famous yellow pansies that make out the U.S. icon there at Founder Circle. They actually grow those pansies in those in that nursery. And I'm sure other things are done, but those are the items that I know about specifically. So
yeah, I was lucky enough to get a tour, Greg, a couple years ago of all the back operations of Augusta National, including the nursery. You know, they had, I believe they had, you know, like a turf, you know, a place they could, you know, grow the turf. And then of course it was all the tunnels that connect everything into the new, back then it was the new media complex. It's the back operations of Augusta National are to me as fascinating as the course itself. All the pieces that come into play for basically 1 week of the year. It's just, it's absolutely fascinating. It's really a place like no other in that regard.
It really is. And as, if you ever ask a member, I actually did this a couple of years ago. I asked every member I came in contact with down there. I said, what is the most, or actually what is the greatest thing about being a member of Augusta National? And they said, actually it's the tournament. We love hosting the patrons and the people that get to come on site. And this was asked of about four members, and they all said the same thing. And it kind of shocked me, but if you really get to the heart of what goes on at Augusta National, it really is. It's to impress everybody that walks through that door, whether it's a member, whether it's a patron, whether it's a guest of the club. It's all about the first-class experience that you experience there.
And what's really great about that and the fact that they embrace it is, you know, it's kind of the reason we have the green jacket, right? So that at tournaments, if you see somebody wearing a green jacket, they're an Augusta National member. And I'd say if you ever have a question, they actually are very helpful. That's literally why they wear the jackets, so that they can help you. I mean, they're not, you know, like, you know, the volunteers on the property, but they are extremely helpful to answer your questions. That's why they wear the green jackets on the property. It's pretty amazing.
It really is. And I know a lot of people are intimidated. If they go to the tournament for the first time, they'll see someone in a member's jacket. Please, I mean, just go up to them, ask them a question, just thank them for the day. And, you know, just say, you know, this is our first time on property, if it is your first time. And, you know, they'll point out some things to you right there about the club and, you know, specifically where you're at. You may be down in Amen Corner. You may be close to the clubhouse, but please do ask that member, because it's one of those things you may never get to do that again for some of the people that go. So I always tell people, if you see a member and they're available to talk, ask them a question. They're very friendly.
They are.
Want to talk to the patrons.
Yeah, I agree 100%. As a matter of fact, this year I'm taking the kids. I took them a couple years ago. And, you know, I'm fortunate to know a couple members, but we were talking to members I didn't know, just to introduce my kids to them and have them ask them questions, because they were just equally fascinated. Like, we can't talk to them. I'm like, of course you can. Like, and they were, you know, I can't remember the members we spoke with, but they were just so nice and just like overjoyed to talk about, you know, their club and the course.
Exactly. And as I tell people that go to the tournament, Southern hospitality is reciprocal. They're going to be nice to you. You be nice to everybody. And it's just a great experience overall. So.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to the next one. You can buy all sorts of items in the Pro Shop Merchandise Center at Augusta National. What is the one article of clothing you cannot purchase in the golf shop?
Do you know what that is, Connor? I know you do because you have the answer.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. It never occurred to me when you brought it up. And I've been into the merchandise center more times than I probably want to count. Definitely more times than my checkbook would like to tell you. But it didn't occur to me until I read it. Go ahead.
It's okay. The answer is actually pretty easy, and it's shoes. However, I will say that with all the stuff you can buy at Augusta National, it really does amaze me. I had some friends joke one time, and this is kind of off the cuff, but I will say it, that you could walk up with hardly anything on and be dressed by the time you got out of the pro shop.
I think that's 100% true. I mean, you're right. I mean, they have underwear, socks, pants, t-shirts, sweatshirts, hoodies. They have sweaters, jackets, polos, hats. They have umbrellas if it's super hot and you just want to shade yourself. They have a chair if you need to sit down. Mm-hmm. They have drinks. I mean, you could live your entire life at Augusta National and never have to leave.
Exactly. And it's amazing. But shoes are the one item that they've never sold in the main pro shop. Now, I do say that with a caveat. In 2022, Berkman's Place actually offered a pair of Peter Millar shoes with the iconic map and pin flag logo on the side. So I do have that caveat. Most of the people will go through the main pro shop, but those lucky patrons that had the chance to go through Berkman's, those Peter Millar shoes were actually available. So that it kind of ruined my theory, but it is one of those funny things that kind of comes up that because when you walk in there, like you said, you see everything from underwear to t-shirts to ties to button-up shirts to hoodies to, I mean, the spectrum's just across the board right now with the items that they offer there at the pro shop now.
What's really scary to me, Greg, is that you know that they offered them in 2022.
Yes.
How do you know that? How do you know that, Greg?
I was lucky enough to go into Berkman's Place in 2022. So was able to go through and actually see kind of what had happened at Berkman's. So it was really interesting to kind of see that pro shop. And the icon is a little bit different. Everybody's used to that yellow U.S. map with the red flag logo on it, but it's a little bit different at Berkman's, and you'll see it on some people throughout the grounds. It's an embroidered logo, but it's the old 1934 logo, as they call it. And it is, it's almost like a little embroidered circle, and it has the old 1934. If you've ever looked at the Augusta National Invitational Tournament program, it's a lot like the design on that U.S. map and pin flag logo on that program.
Love it. How about let's jump into the master song. It's burnt into our brains when you hear it. You know, 2 months prior to the Masters, you cheer up. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of people out there that don't know it has lyrics.
It is. Yes. So
you're going to sing them for us, correct?
No. I'm going to save our listeners their ears. As I say, my voice isn't that great, so I definitely don't want to hear the singing voice. But there are actually lyrics to the song. The original songwriter, Dave Loggins, actually wrote the song for Augusta. Actually, he knew someone that worked with Frank Cherkinian, make sure I get that name right, that used to be with CBS, and they were actually looking for a song. In 1981, he wrote the song that we all know, that iconic piano medley that if we just hear it just automatically takes us to that wonderful tournament and those grounds. But there are actually lyrics that go along with that, and he references some of the players such as Ben Hogan and Gary Player in those. Now, we'll say, however, in my opinion, the piano medley really is better.
Agreed.
Without the lyrics.
Absolutely agreed.
If you listen to it, and this is one of those trivia facts that you can really get down the rabbit hole with. But Dave Loggins is actually third cousin to Kenny Loggins. And you're saying, Kenny Loggins, why do I know that name? One? some people that love Top Gun, No Danger Zone, but for our listeners that really, really enjoy the old movie Caddyshack, he wrote the original song to I'm All Right. So that song that plays...
Great connection.
Yeah, great connection. So there is a connection to Caddyshack and Augusta National, but it is through a third cousin. So
love. I mean, it's appropriate, right? Completely appropriate.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So
the next one on our list is Augusta National has always been protective of copyrights and icons. Have they ever sent a cease and desist to one of their own members?
Now, this was one that happened a few years ago, and it is actually true. And it is one of those funny things that actually happened that the member didn't know it happened until he got the cease and desist order. And what that comes from was Geico Insurance used the iconic scoreboards in one of their commercials for their insurance. The golfer in the commercial was attacked by a kraken and did not leave a very good impression. Augusta National sent a cease and desist to Geico, which is majority owned by Berkshire Hathaway and member Warren Buffett. So it is one of those odd things that happened, but you'll see the edits that happened over time. They used the iconic big white scoreboards in that commercial at one time. And then after the cease and desist, those scoreboards were taken out and replaced with something else.
So, oh my goodness. So funny. Here's another one that we kind of picked up on our last podcast, which was before Augusta National. The wisteria vine at the back of the clubhouse is the oldest wisteria vine in the United States.
That is actually true. Not only is it the oldest vine, most all wisteria vines can be traced back to this one vine in the United States, which is just absolutely amazing to me. It was the start of the wisteria vine that has become very prominent not only in Savannah and Charleston and throughout most of the Southeast, but almost all wisteria can be traced back to this one vine that is still active and growing at Augusta National at the back of the clubhouse.
Isn't that crazy?
It is. I mean, to think about what the Masters and Augusta National is known for, if you really get into the agricultural history of what all really kind of started there, it is amazing. And like we've said with the last podcast that we did together, I mean, there's a reason that Georgia is known as the Peach State, because it all originated there in that Georgia property. So
it's unbelievable. If you're looking for that, is Before Augusta National. It's a hour-long podcast with myself and Greg Lamb, and we dive into the prehistory of Augusta National as a golf course. And I just think it's a fascinating podcast. I learned a lot. If you have the moment and you haven't listened to it, find it and give it a listen. It's really, really good.
Yeah.
Okay, here's a good one. The Masters used to have a long drive contest and putting clinics before the Masters.
Mm-hmm. That is actually true. Before the making and use of the par 3 course and the par 3 tournament, the field would have long drive contest off the first tee for practice round attendees. So it was kind of that before the par 3 tournament course, what we all love to see is, you know, bring your kids to work day, I think is what they've recently called it for some of the pros. There used to actually be long drive contests, and I hope he's still out there, but Bob Zafian, who's a great historian,
yeah,
and a person Bob. That's out there, Bob actually let me know. I think Jack Nicklaus still has the long drive money clip that he wore, that he won the last time it was done, and I think he still carries it around to this day.
Oh, how cool is that? So that's what you won. You won a money clip.
You won a money clip for the long drive contest. And for the putting clinics, they used to have where the putting green now is actually a little bit larger and kind of stretched closer to the back of the clubhouse, kind of even with it. But they've kind of moved that back due to distancing the tee of the first tee. But they used to have these putting clinics to show golfers, you know, how to read the greens, how to actually go through their setup and what they're actually
with patrons, correct?
With patrons. So,
how amazing would that have been?
I know the patrons would line around, you know, the roped off area, and they would actually be a part of a putting clinic, and you could watch, you know, Hogan and Snead and, you know, the original early Palmers, just actually showing you how to, you know, line up a putt and what to do. To me, don't get me wrong, I think the par three course is a great thing to do for patrons and everyone alike, but I would have loved to go back in time to actually see one of those putting clinics and long drive contests. So,
oh goodness. Well, here's the next one. This is one that I threw in there. I heard this a couple years ago, and weirdly enough, I just heard it a week ago, that there is a belief that if you get a hole in one on, I've heard, the 12th hole or any hole at Augusta National, you're invited to become a member of the club. What do you think of that one, Greg?
That one I have a hard time believing. I think this is where we get into your segment on the myths and facts. So I'll kind of jump into the questions here.
Yeah, I'll tell you this one. It is completely false. A friend of mine got a hole-in-one on the 12th hole. Mark, I'll just use his first name. And by the way, there's probably not a better hole to get a hole-in-one on, specifically at Augusta National, but maybe anywhere. And also a fun fact, he is not a member of Augusta National years later. So that one's 100% false. I mean, geez, I mean, how much more pressure would that put on you as a guest of Augusta National if you thought if you got a hole-in-one, you were going to become a member?
Well, I mean, I've heard that through other people, and I've always thought that, yeah, I think there's some other criteria that probably falls along with that, but I would imagine, I know some of the collegiate golfers that get to play Augusta National, I know that they are not offered membership after they make a hole-in-one.
I don't know if any club in the world would have such a trivial way to make somebody a member by getting a hole-in-one. I could just see, you know, some person hitting a ball off of a tree, it then hits a rock and then goes in the hole, and they're like, you're a member! You know, it's absolutely false, folks.
Yeah, part of your vetting process is that you have to get a hole in one.
There's only 20 members at Augusta because there's only 20 people who've got a hole in one there.
That is so funny.
That'd be similar to say, if you hit the ball in the water, you lose your membership at Augusta National as well.
Exactly. I just think that is an amazing thing. But I do hear it. It pops up every year, and we hear it from multiple media outlets. But as you and I both know, that is absolutely false.
I will tell you, my buddy Mark is very upset that that is a false thing. He would love to be a member. We end part one of the myths of the Masters with that story. If you enjoyed our show today, please share it with others and tune back in for part two of the myths of the Masters. I hope those of you listening can forgive our playful tone. We are merely trying to make golf history enjoyable for all ages and levels of golfers. Please know that our reverence for Augusta National, as well as the Masters, is held in the highest regard. Until next time, yours in golf history, this is Connor T. Lewis. Charlotte, if you're listening to this podcast someday in the far-off future, tomorrow is your 13th birthday. I just want to let you know that I love you, your brother, sister, and your mom. Thank you for being a great kid, and happy 13th birthday. Love you, Latte.